Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All right, first half, Ray Boom Boom Mancini, and we'll take an ethical dive into life. I have many thoughts about the story that was going on in Des Moines in the newspaper about the young man who sold the beer, got the money, gave it to the hospital. We really dissect that. First, LifeLock. Child's information, particularly their social security number, has more value to scammers out there because it's a clean slate that can open new credit lines. Kids don't have credit reports, so a thief can use their info, open new accounts, and run up debts before someone catches on. So many ways cyber criminals can take what's yours. Good thing LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security. Help protect against threats to your devices you can't easily see or fix on your own. It's coming up right on 2020. You are online. Your info's out there. There's a new story every day about somebody being hacked into or a company. They're going to steal your info. Protect yourself. If there's a problem, their agents will work to fix it. They're LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No, we prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton Security can see threats you might miss on your own. Hack now and for a limited time, get 30% off your first year with promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or visit LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam and save 30%. Offer expires October 6th. Don't wait. Join now at LifeLock.com.
One night only. Laughs with Bald Brian. A night of stand-up comedy benefiting Stupid Cancer, a charity dedicated to helping young adults with cancer. Featuring Larry Miller, Dana Gould, Greg Fitzsimmons, Joel McHale, Brad Williams, Kyle Dunnigan, Jeff Cesario, Dr. Drew, and Adam Carolla. With your host, Brian Bishop.
Hey, this is Brian. I'm so excited and proud to be hosting this incredible fundraiser benefiting Stupid Cancer. They've been there for young adults like me who were diagnosed with cancer, and I'm thrilled to be able to pay it forward. If you love comedy, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm guessing you do, then please don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to laugh and give back to this great organization.
Saturday, November 2nd at the Avalon Theater in Hollywood. For tickets or to donate to the event, go to laughswithbaldbrian.com. That's laughswithbaldbrian.com. And you can join Brian Bishop for a warm-up night at the Dudes Brewing Company in Valencia this Saturday night at 8 p.m. Hosted by Bald Brian, featuring great comedians. And I, Mike Dawson, will even do 5 minutes. But I'm sure you'll come for the other guys. Saturday night at the Dudes Brewing Company in Valencia. For more on this show, go to thedudesbrew.com. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, boxing legend Ray Boom Boom Mancini. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, the napper is heading to Napa. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing. We love that about you. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Boom.
Boom. Boom. I've been...
stepped on it, buddy.
Got some hot bird talk.
Boom. There. Boom.
Mancini. That's right. Sorry. Okay. Took a second. You know why? Because we're talking about Matt yesterday and being replaced.
New Matt.
And new Matt and all kinds of stuff. So it was fresh on my mind. Sorry. Sure. All right.
Hey, come on. How about a new Matt, huh?
He does sound like Quagmire.
Always trying to connect everything. All right. So we'll get into this. Somebody did a very skillful job of taking the Ghostbusters theme and Soulfinger and putting them together. As I've always talked about those songs sounding exactly alike, and they laid them over the top of each other and did a masterful job of it. I was listening to it. They sent it to me. They tweeted it at me. So we got that. I had a bigger thought. So I was listening to the radio today, and they were talking about this story about this, I don't know, this college kid who held up the sign. He wanted some beer, and then next thing you know, people started giving the beer.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next thing you know, there's $1 million, and it was going to the children's hospital. And then the next thing you know, I guess Des Moines Register had to do a deep dive.
They did a profile on him, and it was all very warm and beautiful and lovely. But at the very end of the 6-page profile, they did a deep dive on his tweets.
Right. And so what I've heard so far is their kind of explanation is like, well, what are you going to do? You have to vet everybody. You know,
we have to
vet everybody. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't feel like you need to vet everyone. You can just report what they did now.
Right.
You don't need to vet them. Because the story, he's not editor-in-chief of the Des Moines Register. You know, he's not running, you know, FBI director or anything. You're literally telling, it's like saying, this guy got into a moped accident on Ventura and Vineland Street. You're like, well, we got to vet him.
And it's
like,
have you checked his Facebook?
Some troublesome tweets in his past.
Yeah. No, you're just reporting what happened. This is what happened. Yes. This is a story that happened. If somebody opens a restaurant, it gets really popular, someone gets into a car accident, or somebody is sued by their neighbor or something, it's a story that you're reporting on. There's no reason to look into their past.
In a world where Donald Trump is president, why are we vetting everyone for every little thing? Like,
I don't know. There's not enough.
The most important person in our country is, we're fine with the skeletons in his past.
Yes. Well, what? Okay. Not only that, but so then they do this move, which so I started to think about it. They were like, well, you know, we had to vet him, mm-hmm. but just like, no, you didn't. And then the second one is oh, by the way, how many stories do you tell a day where you don't vet the person?
Yeah.
And then also, when did this begin? Has this always been your process where you just vet every mm-hmm. every kid who's doing a march for cancer and every
crucify him?
They find a guy. Oh, the Hispanic lady has a tortilla in the shape of the Virgin Guadalupe. We've got to vet her. Like, okay, you don't have to vet. You have to vet somebody if they're going to be an airline pilot or something like that. You have to kind of figure out.
It should have to do with the airline and the piloting.
It should have to do with the airline. Okay. So anyway, and then she gave this statement that was like, you know, we struggle. Our toughest job is what to say and what not to say. Sure. It's like, you don't have to struggle with it. You're telling this story that took place in 2019. Then I found out.
There's
I don't know everything, but some of the stuff he put up, or I guess the stuff he put up that was racially insensitive, was just stuff he saw on Tosh.0 and went, oh.
So when he was 16.
Yeah, 16. But people have no idea what a 16-year-old boy's mind is like.
It's a bad place, man.
Hormonally, sexually.
It's a breeding ground of bad decisions.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's an amusement park of just bad ideas that just go never closes. It just never closes. All the stuff you want to do to your friends, you want to do to girls, you want to do to yourself, you want to do to society, it's all bad.
Kick my friend in the face.
Right.
Ride on his handlebars.
It's all there. So we don't need to judge. Okay. Also, then I started thinking about there is a difference to me. Again, it's my sort of Papa John. Not Papa John Phillips, the guy who had sex with his adult daughter.
We're cool with that.
We can't judge. Nope. The guy who made pizza, who now comically has Shaq walking in. You got to find that Shaq commercial. The only thing funnier to me in this little snapshot of our horrible society is we shit-can Papa John because he uses the N-word to his sort of
crisis manager,
not that he's calling anyone the N-word. He's simply saying Colonel Sanders used to say it. Mm-hmm. And this is you saying something racially insensitive I don't even care about, but you repeating a joke that you heard on TV, mm-hmm. on TV, not in a locker room, on TV. Right. I don't know. I feel like we making a joke that you saw about Chester the Molester on SNL, mm-hmm. if you saw it and it aired and you're repeating it, it's not really your joke. Right.
Yep.
I don't know that you need to be punished for that.
It's also like, you know, people retweet things that people say, right. whether good, bad, in between, controversial, whatever. And oftentimes they're forced to say, like, retweets are not endorsements. Because a lot of times people think, oh, you retweet it, you think the same thing. You're perpetuating. Nope, just retweeting it, just repeating it out there.
But did you hear the latest update that the cancel culture canceled itself on this one?
Well, it's good because then we start looking into the person that wrote the article.
Aaron Talvin.
Now they have insensitive tweets.
That's what happens.
The worm has turned.
I got.
But that's the lesson. Everybody has something.
You got to find.
Not me.
Max Zapata. You got to find Papa John commercial. No, it's
there's
great.
There's a few different ones. With
well,
Shaq.
There's one where it's like Shaq's like high fiving all the red haired kids, mm-hmm. and then at a certain point, the best one is like he's sitting at a boardroom with a whole bunch of white people looking at him, and he's pontificating, and it's like they're trying to get back, like, oh, we hired Shaq. You want to talk about backing up the Brinks truck and having it hit another Brinks truck. You be the super likable black man who literally can just step into any business or enterprise that's having a little difficulty with the optics. And now all of a sudden you just come walking in and you I don't know what he has to do with Papa John Pete, but he's Papa John now.
He's the new likable Al Sharpton.
Right.
When you're having trouble, just bring him in.
Come fix this for us. It's funny too, if you find the Chick-fil-A commercials, people sitting around talking about good vibes. They used to be talking about chicken.
Right.
Now they're talking about good vibes.
They bring in Nathan Lane. Hello.
Watch Shaq. How much respect he gets from Whitey.
High fives, kissing hands, dancing.
I love being part of this team.
The woman he hugged looks like, what's her name?
Paula Deen.
He's making pizza.
Join the board.
Look at all
white. Join the board?
Join the board. Because he's a pizza expert.
Yeah, he's an NBA.
Better day.
It's a little on the nose when you're trying to repair that.
It's also unintentionally racist. Like bringing the token black guy to say, like, we're cool. That's not cool.
Much of the anti-racist whatever is racist. Right. Like, Papa John formerly, nothing to do with Shaq. We get in a little trouble at the N-word. Bring this guy in. Show him high-fiving white women. And then we'll sell some pizza pies. When you sit back and look at it, when we look at a lot of the kind of advertising and stuff from the 30s and 40s where they featured black people and like watermelon and stuff like that, and you wince now. Yeah. You're going to look back on this era and do a lot of wincing.
We're looking at it.
We're looking at it. Right. All right. So the story, and you have it, and then I have a little soliloquy about this.
So do you just want to hear kind of the wrap-up or the
overview? Give us the broad strokes.
Okay, so as you said, this kid, Carson King, he put up this funny, you know, cardboard sign with his Venmo account saying, like, I need some beer, whatever, Busch Light Supply. And people just, you know, during a live broadcast.
Oh, this is at a game day, I assume.
Okay. And people loved it. They started Venmoing him money. And he did not think he was going to get much, but he started getting around almost $100,000, and he didn't know what to do with it.
It's funny. When you said Venmo, I'm so out of it, but Ven, I was thinking he needed beer, right? So there's Ven.
Oh, there's Vendome, the liquor store.
Vendome, the liquor store, and then there's BevMo.
That's right.
So I thought he could like throw the ultimate beer buying place and turn him into Venmo.
A corporate merger.
Like a blimp hanger of alcohol. Like, go to the Venmo. In my little brain, I don't know Bitcoins or anything. I was just going Venmo.
BevMo.
BevMo.
Venmo's like PayPal.
Vendome.
Yeah.
Venmo.
That's good. Yeah, this is like, this is PayPal. So he started, it started rolling, and he didn't know what to do with it.
Well, are you guys familiar with the sort of the culture at game day? Like, people bring signs. If you watch game day, there are dozens of signs, and some are very creative and some are vulgar and whatever,
and some are just panhandling.
Got in on it.
So he called his parents, said, what do I do? They said, first and foremost, buy yourself a case of beer, because that's what you wanted. Then go ahead and donate the rest of it to the children's hospital, because the local children's hospital there is apparently amazing, and it's built right next to the stadium, and there's an observation deck at the hospital, and once a game, everyone stands up and waves to the kids, and it's great.
Would people know, like, this guy, let's just say, got $1 million or 800 grand or whatever it is.
Basically did.
And let's just say he just put it all in his pocket.
Yeah.
Would we know?
We would never come up.
He had no obligation to tell anyone.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if we could go to his account or see on Venmo.
You can set it to public, but he'd be stupid.
That's not a great idea.
All right. Who amongst us, by the way, would just take $1 million and give it away?
Buddy, you think this Laughs with Bald Brian money is going to charity?
Yeah. But we're doing all the fucking work.
That's what I'm saying.
What I'm saying is, yeah.
What do you think I'm saying?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah, sorry. No, I mean, like, really, who at age 22? Yeah. Like, I don't know what I would have done with that money. And also, hey, I came up with a good sign, and it seemed to work.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So that's pretty incredible, and it shows he comes from a good family.
And that's where it should have stopped. You know, he got the local ice cream place in Altoona, Iowa, named a beer ice cream after him, and he's getting spotlight on, you know, Good Morning America and all this attention, as he should. And then somebody has to go trolling around. And they, like you said, they said, well, you know, we wanted to do this really heartwarming piece, but we had to do our due diligence. So we decided instead of making it part of the headline, we would just sort of bury it at the bottom as though nobody would read that far.
Right.
So that became the story, of course, that he, you know, kind of retweeted these Tosh.0 jokes. And then once, of course, Anheuser-Busch had to completely puss out and sever ties with him.
Well,
because they were going to match the donation, and they still are.
After somebody went to them, mm-hmm. That's the whole thing.
But why,
like, who's going to people?
Why could they could have led by example on this whole thing, saying we're not supporting the kid who retweeted the Tosh.0 stuff. We're supporting the kid who donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to the hospital.
You have to understand, and I've experienced some of this. Corporate culture. I've explained to you guys, like, corporate culture, you know, we always try to ascribe some sort of feelings to it, or good vibes, or Subarus, good vibes. They just make military helicopters as well. And every good day. They are scared as shit. They're scared to death. They're scared. I mean, just look at the Papa John thing. Everybody is scared. The corporations are first and foremost scared. That's what they are. They're not good. They're not bad. They're scared.
They're weak.
Yeah, they're weak. Well, no, being yeah. So I would say thank you. I always say people aren't bad. People are weak, and that leads to bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they have a weak character. So scared leads to weak, and weak leads to bad. But that's how people are. Yes.
Bad leads to.
Right.
The
so
dark side.
That's where we're at.
Yeah.
And so these corporations, they're not anything. They're just like, we don't want to get bad ink. They're all scared of bad ink.
But this is the best ink they could have gotten. They paired up with a kid who's donating all his money to the hospital.
Right, but somebody said something bad about some ethnic culture thing, some joke at the bottom, and we're scared. We're out. We don't have anything. We don't have heart. We want everyone to think we have heart. That's why we do a bunch of commercials advertising we have heart. But we don't have heart. We don't have souls. We don't have anything. We have a bottom line. That's it.
Right.
We're a corporation. We'll bail on anybody.
Right.
Immediately.
Well, they did, even though they are still going to come through with the money. And then, of course, as I said, Aaron Calvin, who was the one, the whistleblower on all these horrible tweets, he had a couple horrible tweets of his own. Shocking. People were pissed that he did this, and so they started digging around in his tweets. He had racist slurs against black people, jokes about
like
abusing
what?
Women, making fun of gay marriage. Let's see, we got a Brian, why don't you go ahead and read that for us?
Wow.
My glasses are a little foggy.
Chris, you're the producer.
They'd rather give me the nigga please award than I'd rather have. Boy, this ain't.
He's quoting Kanye.
Quoting Kanye.
Yeah, that's the quote from.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's another retweet. You want to go grab that?
All right, everybody. If we had enough of this, or we want to keep going with this, I've been screaming about it for years. Nobody seems to care. The only way to remedy it is no apologies, right. But everyone is so scared, and that's where corporate America comes in.
Yes, and I wouldn't say he apologized, but this kid, Carson King, in my opinion, continues to act with the utmost class and decorum in this whole situation. He went publicly after all of this shitstorm that this stupid newspaper caused and said, I don't blame them. You know, it's fine. I'm talking out of my own, you know, free will. They didn't ask me to do this. I appreciate them doing the story, and it's all good. I mean, this kid is just, like, very classy.
Magnanimous.
Yeah.
Well, first things first. Again, who would have taken $1 million that was in your account and given it to the children's hospital?
In college,
$1,000. Yeah.
Like, worth killing for.
As
you always say, Adam.
Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Well put.
That is Adam.
It's a drop from a few weeks
ago. So, this is all I've been...
Yodem.
I've been... Okay. The tattletale gene, the outing gene, the go back and bust
just
people
thought you should know.
Gene, mm-hmm. is a problem. Mm-hmm. It's people at their worst. It's chick...
It's juvenile.
Chick adjacent.
It's juvenile.
But it always ends up being dudes.
I was going to say, these are Arrested Development men.
Hold on. Remember I wrote that book?
What was it called?
50 Years Will All
Not
Be Checked.
That doesn't ring a bell.
10 years old now. We're making the move. Where you're seeing it is, okay, so here, I'm going to pay you a compliment. You're right. Men run society.
Thank
okay.
you. Thank I'll you give validating. You
that. Now.
You're just quoting Gina.
No, men, you know, they're the president. They're Papa John's. They have these jobs. Okay. And they're in sort of charge of many facets of our society. They're the guy. Why is the guy? Why'd it have to be the man pilot or the man vice president or the man whatever? Okay. It's a bunch of dudes. Now, as dudes, if you have a bunch of dudes in charge, let's just say, all right, I'm going to circle back. Years ago, about 20 years ago, and I've told this story before, I was explaining that my dad came here from Italy and his parents came. My dad's parents came here from Italy. They're broke. They live in like a ghetto in South Philly. This whole thing of like, I'm responsible mm-hmm. for slavery or it's on my resume or I need to make reparations mm-hmm. or we're all responsible for whatever. Hey, if you're a tobacco farmer from fucking Virginia and you got a bunch of acreage over there in your family, go look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Not me.
We could draw a straight line.
That's nothing to do with me. We were destitute and poor and my parents.
They weren't here.
My parents weren't here. They didn't own a car when they got here. Screw everybody. And then I went on to say that, my three nephews, all born to a German father, and they're much closer to the Holocaust than I am to slavery. Of course, it'd be absurd to hold them responsible mm-hmm. or even think they were any way connected or explain to them that they had to apologize to Jews or whatever. They're kids.
Yeah.
But if you will look at a calendar, they're much closer to that atrocity than I am to slavery. Somebody heard this and, of course, reported to my sister that I'd called my nephews Nazis because they felt like she needed to know. Just like the Des Moines Register felt like they needed to vet.
She did her due diligence. Mm-hmm.
Do you think my sister needed to know that erroneous information? And by the way, I hope the fucking cunt who reported that killed herself or fell on a crocheting needle while she was running or something. But either way, my sister needed to know. And also, if she needed to know, why didn't you report to her what I said?
Yeah, send her a clip.
The story was they should not be responsible or called for the Holocaust or called Nazis. I'm using them as an example of not being connected to that. But you had to go ahead and modify my story to actually the opposite of what I said. Just like when you saw those douches on the Young Turks. Like, well, Adam Carolla doesn't think he should pay for kids. Right. I said 18 times, I don't care about the money. I don't care about the money. It's right in my dissertation. Right. Why? Hold your ears, Brian. Mm-hmm. Do you have a brain tumor? Are you a liar? Or do you have an agenda? Because of course you have an agenda. I just thought you should know what Adam said. Well, if you just thought my sister should know what I said about her kids, why didn't you accurately report what I said about her kids?
If it was so important.
You want to know why? Because that's not information. Right. That's who cares?
Right.
So you twisted it, then you sent it, then I get the hysterical call for my sister wanting think I'm on national radio calling my nephews Nazis.
Because you got a reaction, a more salacious version.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. I really hope you're claimed by a grizzly bear or cancer or something.
A cancerous grizzly bear?
A cancerous grizzly bear with AIDS. Okay.
Too weak to
fight. They're the worst people. This is the worst instincts ever. This is the worst impulse. As a human being, this is a horrible impulse. Now, this is a 44-year-old middle-aged bitch who's sitting in her car who just thought my sister should know. But it's a horrible impulse.
It's tattletale. It's kid stuff.
Right. it used to kind of hang out in the feminine department.
Gossip.
Yes. As soon as I found out that somebody, too, I knew it wasn't a dude. This is chick work. Fine. Good. Now, what's happened? We've gotten the dudes to act like chicks because we've decided this is progress for our society. We're going to get a bunch of dudes. When you hear Beto O'Rourke, that's a chick. That's not a dude.
Beth O'Rourke.
Beta.
Beta.
That's better.
Beta.
That's better.
Yeah. You're going to be Spanish.
Made before.
That's good. So that's chick talk coming out of a mouth of a waif dude from Texas. We have swung over. So now the decision makers are thinking like chicks. And thus, now we live in this society where this is what goes on.
Well, it's no good.
No, it's no good. There's a lot of bad impulses that need to be fucking controlled. And we need some quiet dignity. And dudes need to fucking knock it off. Mm. Have a little decorum out there. And I assume there's going to be more of this. But the good news is everyone will stop listening because it'll essentially be like, you know, like, remember, like, oh, Pam Anderson's got a bootleg porn. And then it's like Kim Kardashian's got a bootleg porn.
That's right.
Eventually, everyone has a bootleg porn. And now it's not really a thing to have a bootleg porn.
Gina has a good bootleg porn.
Anymore. Right. So that's what we'll do with... I've always said, never been a better time to be an actual racist because they're calling everyone a racist. Mm-hmm. And you can just hide in amongst the people who aren't racist or being called racist. Yep. You can hide behind Papa John while he cries into his beer.
The best part about this story, the silver lining, is that the guy who tried to, you know, tattle had the stuff in his whatever Twitter feed that people went and found. So, like, at a certain point, it's just going to be everyone's got something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Cancel culture is finally canceling itself. Yeah. So maybe we can all move on now.
Hopefully. Oh, Crow Guy, you're going to push to next week?
Oh, I gave him a call now. I just thought if you're, you want this first thing to be a little tighter.
Yeah, probably. Let me hit. Yeah. Got a lot of hot crow talk coming up. I got Brooke Lennon first. You spend one third of your life in the sheets. You don't want them to be insanely comfortable. Of course you do. Brooke Lennon, luxury linen sheets and robes without the luxury markups. That's what I want to say. Founded 2014 by husband and wife who wanted beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg. Exclusive offer for my listeners, 10% off and free shipping. Use the promo code Carolla, C-A-R, as in car. Oh, yeah. At brooklinen.com. All their sheets, comforters, towels all come with a lifetime warranty. Only way to get the 10% off and free shipping is use a promo code Carolla at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com with the promo code Carolla. All right. Let's see. I'll play you that Ghostbusters Soulfinger mashup that somebody just kind of laid over one over the other. It's 3.5 minutes. I'll play 90 seconds of it, but it's the Barclay
Soulfinger.
Right.
And, of course, Ray Parker Jr. Ghostbusters. He's a great guest, by the way.
Reason I find it interesting is that Ray Parker Jr. was... ended up getting sued and Ivan Reitman
walked away scot-free.
Yeah.
Huey Lewis made a bunch of money off of from Reitman and from the thing. And the reason that backstory that people may or may not know, the reason they got sued for sure is I think Ivan Reitman, it's funny because I was sitting in Ivan Reitman's office with Jimmy Kimmel, who's the biggest Huey Lewis fan ever. Ivan Reitman hates Huey Lewis because he got sued by him. That was a funny conversation to referee.
I bet. funny, haha.
Yeah. So he basically, Ivan Reitman or Ghostbusters or whomever, they went to Huey Lewis and went, hey, write us a song for Ghostbusters. And Huey said, oh, well, I'm busy right now. And then they went, oh, okay. And then they went to Ray Parker Jr. and went, do a song for Ghostbusters. Sounds like Huey Lewis. So it's real easy to connect the dots now if you're in the courtroom. But anyway, here's the one from Glenn Rubenstein. been fixated on the similarities between Ray Parker Jr.'s Ghostbuster and the Barquet's Soulfinger ever since he heard Adam Carolla talk about it. So they kind of laid it over. But again, it's funny that they were sued. They lost a bunch of money, but not for the song that sounds so much like it.
If there's something strange in your neighborhood, who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Afraid of no ghosts.
These songs cook.
If you're seeing things running through your head, who can you call?
Ghostbusters!
An invisible man sleeping in your bed. Oh, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Rhythm section's tight.
Damn.
I'm guessing the Barquets didn't have as representation that was as good
I'm
as...
I'm guessing.
This is the only version I ever want to hear again.
I can't even... When I listen to it, I'm not even sure which is which anymore. Cold Finger. Ghostbuster.
Who you gonna call?
Which one?
If you're all alone.
All right. So there it is. Thank you, Glenn, for
awesome.
Realizing my dream.
So we have a four-year-old in the house, and the Ghostbuster song gets played round the clock. He's going to love this version.
Somebody sent me a tweet, which is funny, another funny liked tweet, which is the channel guide had Crank Yankers on at the same time as, I think, a slot or two above it, show.
No.
Now, was that on Lifetime? I can't read it from here.
Yeah, well, there's a Lifetime movie called A Mother's Worst Fear playing simultaneously with Crank Yankers.
Yes. Counter-programming.
So I said to Max Zapata, what was it called? Like, was it called the Molly Fairbanks story, A Mother's Worst Fear?
Right.
And he said, no, it's just A Mother's Worst Fear. Like,
they get to claim it?
They just cut right to it now. Like, why are we doing the... saying the bitch's name before we get to the mother's word. That's the part that everyone wants.
Right.
The rest is just parsley.
Yep.
Let's get right to where the chicks live.
So which fear is this? Is this join a cult, kidnapping, rape?
Oh yeah, can we look at the info?
It could be it's actually the last
two. Blowhard brother called your sons Nazis on a syndicated radio show.
Oh, the info, the picture cuts off, but it's Alice is starting a new chapter in life by moving on from her highly stressful job as a hostage negotiator.
Whoa!
Oh, my God!
And putting more focus on her family. Suddenly, her world is turned upside down when her daughter is abducted with no demand for ransom.
I told Max Zapata, no demand for ransom means your daughter's hot.
Yep.
Good news and bad news.
We're good. We're paid.
I got good news and bad news. There's no demand for ransom.
What do they want?
They just want another round.
I think they already
want to watch a little Sports Center in the refractory period. Before.
This is a mother's worst nightmare.
Well, you know your daughter's hot.
I mean, I knew that.
She discovers the kidnapper has a personal vendetta against her husband.
Uh-huh.
Of course.
Not the woman who's the hostage negotiator?
Yeah.
Okay.
But here's the thing. It had an original title, right?
Yes. So originally, you can't put the poster. It was called A Wicked Vendetta.
Okay. Oh, this is a real movie.
Yeah, well, it's a made-for-TV Lifetime movie. But
here's my point. Why did they change it to A Mother's Worst Nightmare? That's what I'm saying. I was joking that you have to put A Mother's Worst Nightmare after everything now.
Yeah, they heard you.
Right.
Yeah, so it got changed to A Mother's Worst Fear. Now it has a new title.
Another one?
A Mother's Greatest Fear.
Oh, Jesus.
You see how a bunch of fucking dudes go, hey, these dopey chicks, all they want to be is scared shitless. Like, we got to just go to the scare of them. Scare them. It'll scare everybody with everything. Remember I'm screaming about everyone scaring everybody with everything all the time? Just, you know why you can scare people with nothing? Because they don't have problems now. See, back when people had problems, you couldn't just scare them with titles. Okay. You had to scare them with something. You need a fucking torch. You need to wave something in front of them. I don't get why people don't understand what's going on. Everyone's got air conditioning. They have food brought to their house. They do not fear anything. There's no real fear. But we've carved out 20% of our brain for fear.
Yeah.
So it needs to be filled with something.
It needs to be fed.
It needs to be fed.
There is a long litany on IMDb of titles for this. Like, it was known as a few different things during its lifetime. A Mother's Worst Fear, A Mother's Greatest Fear, Daughter Taken, and, of course, A Wicked Vendetta.
When are we going to start?
Daughter Taken. Come right to the chase.
Well, it's basically female taken anyway.
Are we going to start doing targeting like they do with Coke cans, you know, where they put people's names on it? We go, Janet's greatest fear. And then some chicken comes going, I'm Janet.
You're flipping through the guy and says, hey, Adam. You're like, I'm going to love this show.
Yeah, like I'm going to do a thing, go, most popular names for women 40 to 51. And it's like, Jennifer. Okay, Jennifer's greatest nightmare. And then you'll just get 8% of the population to watch it,
that's
right?
Good,
because
yeah.
I went to high school with 400 chicks named Michelle or Jennifer, right?
All Michelles.
So you just go Michelle. Now, again, it got to be you have to sort of drill down on the numbers. They have to be mothers between the age of like 37 and 51 or something like that, and you go right for that sweet spot.
And they're watching anyway. They're already watching Lifetime.
Next week you do the same movie, but you just swap out Jennifer for Michelle.
I love it.
And we just keep, we get the whole country that way.
Karen, Liz.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to find this hard to believe. No Rotten Tomatoes score for A Wicked Vendetta.
Oh, it didn't get reviewed.
IMDb, however, and we know that IMDb movies fall always between 6.4 and 7.6.
Right.
4.5.
Ooh.
Not a good sign.
Not good.
Not a good sign.
All right. Also, here's an interesting thought. All these movies about a mother's greatest fear, it's always blonde-haired chicks, right? They're never marketed.
Oh, they're
never marketed toward black moms.
No.
Wonder why? Well, black moms got problems. They have the kids wanting to join a gang or drugs or single mom, three jobs. They have problems.
They need to go to fantasy land.
They don't need to go here for problems. They can go home for problems. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This has to be marketed toward chicks who don't have problems.
Right.
That's why you have to find the same sort of blonde chick in her 40s, and it's all marketed toward them. There's no urban version of this because they're living that.
Right.
And there's no Hispanic version of it either. They're just working. They have their own problems. They struggle.
In the urban version, Vendetta is the daughter's name.
Mm.
There's
no Asian version of this because they're not dumb enough to buy into this nonsense. They're too busy fucking being a thoracic surgeon somewhere at the hospital. But there is Whitey. This is Whitey's domain.
You're right.
Get them. And they're all, by the way, they're all in the kind of little upper middle class. This is like, it could happen anywhere.
Yeah.
Oprah.
Joey Lawrence.
Could happen anywhere.
Whoa. Wait, was he the bad guy?
No, he's the husband.
Put that poster back up.
Joey Lawrence is the husband. Whoa.
Well, he's bald now, so maybe that's him at the
bottom.
No, none
of those are Joey Lawrence.
Wait, that could be Joey at the bottom.
Yeah, we'll play a little bit of the trailer.
That is the we're looking at a picture. Whoa, Joey Lawrence. I love it. My favorite part of sitcoms are when they try to graft on a kind of catchphrase.
Dynamite?
They try to.
What
some
you talking
work,
about?
Some don't work. Full House had Stamos going, Lord have mercy. But he never said it enough.
It didn't stick.
It didn't, like, you can't get caught in between. Yep. You got to go hard for the first first three seasons. Yeah,
oh
Joey
God.
Lawrence, shaved head,
hey, I'll
little
speak,
bit of a bump.
I'll speak for my generation. Whoa, stuck.
Whoa
was known.
Listen, I'm yelling it out, so I think it worked. All right.
Someone tweeted me. It's like, oh, Joey Lawrence looks like Bald Brian now. You fucking racist. Not all bald guys look alike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I wish it was.
Folliculist.
Let's see. All right. Ray, Boom Boom Mancini's a couple minutes out. Let me hit Castrol. You can have a chance to win. Oh, a trip to Vegas to meet me. Head to your local AutoZone. Enter automatically with a purchase of Castrol. Pick up 5 quarts of Castrol Edge motor oil and an STP. Extended life oil filter for just $33.99. Use your AutoZone rewards to automatically be entered to win.
3 days, 2 nights in Las Vegas. Coming up November, say hi to me, right, Dawson?
No purchase necessary to enter to win. Open to residents of the 50 United States, District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. Must be 18 years or older. Sweepstakes valid September 24th through October 21st. Void where prohibited. See your local AutoZone store for more details.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I'll talk for a minute, and Ray Boom Boom Mancini will just come walking in. How about that? Yeah, boy, no, you've arrived. Ray Boom Boom Mancini is a very interesting dude, and some guys go through their professional career, and they sort of end up like Earl Campbell. Like, if you see Earl Campbell now, you go, oh, my God. And then there are other guys like Eric Dickerson or something. You just see them, they look brand new.
Marcus Allen.
You know, Marcus Allen.
Looks like he plays today.
And you know, you go, well, you know, but Earl Campbell's running style. Like, everyone took punishment.
Of course.
Everyone. You played at the college level that they played at. You played as many years in the pros as they played at. You took punishment. Some people seem they just don't have the wear and tear gene like others do.
Sugar Ray.
Sugar Ray is lucid and looks brand new. And then there are other guys that are slurring their speech and walking with a limp. And
they all got punched the same amount, more or less.
You know, we as human beings have to attribute everything to everything, but there is a genetic component. There's a part of it where it's sort of like saying, blaming someone who's short or someone male pattern baldness or, well, why do you only have an A cup, woman? Like, it's just, that's just,
I've never been asked that.
That's who you are.
You were asked that at A7.
Yeah, you were 11 once. Great minds. Ray Mancini's one of those guys where you just go, doesn't seem like he's ever been hit in the head. All right, so we'll talk to him in a minute. He's pulling up now. There's a fight coming up, and we'll give it a little fight talk. He's the guy who had that situation where he killed the guy in the ring, which is probably not a chapter that you're happy about. But I got to tell you, if I ever killed a woman during sex or killed a man in the ring, I'd repeat it with a certain degree of pride.
Let a couple people know.
Yeah. Now I'd probably say she had a pre-existing condition, but still fucked her pretty good.
If people brought it up to you, you wouldn't like, you know, say, I don't want to talk about that. You'd be like, well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. And they were different nights. It wasn't like that night. You know what I mean?
It wasn't flu.
I spread it out over 4 days.
It was a hell of a weekend.
Yeah.
Labor Day weekend, so.
Yeah, you kill a man in a ring, you blow off steam your way, and I'll do it my way.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, he won the fight in the 14th round. Oh, God, back when they would go into the 14th round, and Kim fell into a coma after the fight, and he died 4 days later. Kim's mother killed herself 3 months after the fight.
Jesus
Christ.
Referee.
Yeah, what's up?
Well, what? Pretty, what happened?
It says the referee, right, Richard Green, also killed himself a year later.
Jesus Christ. God, I didn't even know that part of the story. Well, now, wait a minute. She's Asian, the mom. Mm. Maybe Dooku Kim had a younger sister who got a C on a calculus final.
Oh, we didn't
that's
factor
what,
that in.
Yeah, that's what more pushed her off the bridge.
Right.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't that. All right, somebody grab Ray Boom Boom Mancini, steer him this way, and I will hit Geico real quick. Like, want to save a bunch of money on your auto insurance? How about you go with Geico? That is geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that money, put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day. That was a song, wasn't it?
Catch a Falling Star.
That's right. Geico.com. 15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more. Oh, okay. He's in the restroom. 15% or more on your auto insurance at Geico. That is geico.com. Mancini
was... You must have watched a lot of his fights back in the day.
I did. 29-5 overall, 23 by KO. KO held the WBA lightweight title from 82 to 84. I'm curious, and I'm going to ask Ray Mancini this question. In the lighter divisions, two guys, 128 pounds, 134 pounds, you know, I feel like it's so much of it is will.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Interesting.
Like, in the heavier divisions, when they can land the one punch, when they have the one punch knockout right. power and the whatever, that's a little gift of God mixed what they call with heavy-handed, just guys who punch hard, just sort of naturally and land. And there's will. There's will all throughout. There's will all throughout the weight ranges. But we've all seen the lazy heavyweights. Like, we've all seen the heavyweights that come in with the spare tire around the belly and are kind of hanging on to the other guy.
Because they can still punch?
They can still punch, and they don't have to make a weight, which is a lot of it. You don't see the lighter weight division guys kind of going, I'm going to take a couple rounds off, or I'm just going to kind of tie this guy
Mark
up.
It. Like,
you got to move, and you got to throw punches and bunches, and if you don't, you won't get anywhere in a division with a bunch of guys who weigh 134 pounds. It's not going to work. And you're not going to knock anyone out with one shot.
You're gonna pound for pound, I mean, they're the same weight class.
Yeah, I don't know why the human skull works the way the human skull works, but the lightweight guys will have knockouts, but it's going to be accumulation of punches that takes the guy down, not the one big right. Mike Tyson uppercut that would take, you know, knock a rhino right. out. All right, I'll give a plug while we're getting Boom Boom settled in here. Comedians of the Adam Carolla Show, featuring Greg Fitzsimmons, Jeff Cesario, Adam Ray, Ball Bryan up there.
Yeah.
That's coming. Is that coming to
tomorrow? The first one's tomorrow night.
Yeah, Valencia.
Yep, and then we got Santa Monica and Torrance in a couple weeks.
And I'm going to do a few of those, or one or two of those, or we'll try to figure it out. So we'll get into that. It's tonight. Where? Me at
Napa?
Me at Napa? Is that tonight?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Uptown Theater?
Yeah, there you go. Beautiful theater, by the way. So come say hi. Ray Boom Boom Mancini's in the studio. Good to see you again, my friend.
Nice to see you, Adam. Let me ask, am I in the little boy's chair here? Because I'm way down here, man.
Some slide. We'll see if we can jack it up. Get him a phone book.
And give me an Apple box. I don't care. I'm not proud.
Hey, Ray, I was saying before you came in, I've studied boxing for a long time. I have many thoughts about it. I never thought about this one. What weight did you fight at mainly?
Lightweight.
Was
135 pounds.
135 pounds. Yep. Okay. I was saying 134, 136, whatever.
No, lightweight's 135. Yeah.
135. Is this a fair assessment? You must have a greater desire at 135 to be successful than a heavyweight who may just have some kind of crazy reach, a Klitschko reach. Everyone has desire, but I'm saying at 135, you have to have an iron will because you just have to throw punch after punch after punch. You can't take rounds off.
Well, I think, yes, to answer your question, I like to think that. But not, I mean, anybody who has to make weight.
Right.
You have a higher desire because you don't got to make weight. And, you know, you don't. You know, it takes a little bit because making weight is part of the discipline. Discipline is the fabric for me that carries you through your career.
What did you walk around at when you were making 135?
Yeah, I'd walk around after a fight, you know. First couple of days, you eating up all the stuff that you give up, you know, the dessert stuff. So, you know, so I'd go up to maybe 144, 45. But then you start regulating again, and then you start dropping your weight. So most ever weight was probably – I'd walk around at 42, 41, 42. So when I'd go into training camp, the first couple of days, I was down to 136 already. The last couple of years of my career, I couldn't make weight. Not because I was eating or gorging. It was because I only had 3% body fat.
Right.
My body was growing.
There's nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go. So I get down, you know, I get the weigh in. I was 100, you know, you could weigh, you know, 135 and a half. Well, you got to lose a half pound. And I'm spitting cotton balls. You know, you try to, whatever you can do. I was dry. So people said, why don't you just move up? So I'm not giving my weight, I'm not giving the title up on the scale.
Right.
You have to beat me for the title. And that was, see, here's the thing. This is why nobody's benefited more from the rules than the fighters of today. Meaning, the weigh-in the day before. If I could have weighed in the day before, I may still be champion. Because I was fighting, I had two opponents. The guy I was going to get in the ring with, but I didn't worry about him until after the weigh-in.
Right.
So all through training camp, you worried about weight.
Right. And if you weigh, you would weigh in day of?
Day of, morning of, which is where it should be. 8 o'clock in the morning, forever it was that. And there's no medical proof, no substantiating proof to prove that weighing the night before or the day before is much healthier. No, it's all crap. Your body only needs 4 to 6 hours to replenish. That's a TV decision.
Oh.
If TV to this day said, we're not showing doing any more fights, let's say morning of and back to 15 rounds, be the morning of the 15 and 15 rounds. But for TV, 12 rounds is perfect because now you could have more commercial time, you could have an opening, you have the ending, you could do interviews in between. So it's, you know.
One of the great stories is Sugar Ray Leonard, after he got beat by Roberto Duran, noticed that Roberto was making the rounds, eating, celebrating, drinking, and he saw Roberto like balloon up. And Roberto, who was, you know, fighting him at 148 or 154 or whatever it is.
It was 147. 147.
147. Yeah. He got up to like 200 pounds or something. And so Sugar Ray went, let's make the rematch fast. Now. Let's go. Schedule it. And then he knew Roberto would be having to cut 50 pounds in, you know, 7 weeks.
So Roberto's notorious for that, you know, partying, you know, from Panama. And he did. He was gorged. He gorged. Ate like he was going to an electric chair, you know? And he did that for weeks. And then they'd go, okay, you got X amount of time to get ready for a fight. And then he'd try to lose the weight. He did that until, and as he got older. And then, of course, when he fought Ray at 47, he won the title and exactly what you said. He went and partied. He was America's, you know, he was Latin America's guest everywhere he went. Even the morning of, you know, when he, of course, the No Mas fight, the morning of, what they watched him eat. As soon as the weigh-in was over, and this is where the key is, when the weigh-in was over, they grabbed, they had a big pitcher of cold, he drank a big pitcher of cold water and a pitcher of lemonade. He drank that. You know how much what that does to your stomach? Mm. So that day, then they watched him and he went, and this is what I don't understand either. They were able, he ate at the local diner at the hotel. When you're at the fight, you eat in your room in privacy. You want nobody seeing what you're eating or whatever.
Right.
I never understood that. You know, for a guy who fought all those years, he ate in public. And Ray Leonard's people said they saw him, big steak. He was going through that steak and eating it like it was going electric chair. And he was eating that steak with the iced tea, with the lemonade. And what they knew it was going to do, you know, cause a lot of disruption to his system and to his stomach. And of course, later on, you know. You know, he had the stomach ache. People saw that true. Yeah. You know, later on he met the people. Did he had to go gaga pretty good. You know, and he wasn't going to do it in the ring. Couldn't do it in the ring, you know.
Had to take a dump, huh?
Yeah, to take a bad shit. That's it. So what I'm saying is, in one good punch, one more shot, you don't know. Man, it could have been an ugly scene.
That's a good
point.
But my point,
you know, so the point I'm trying to see is,
what is your point?
It's the point, the point is, we're not, you can't do that to your body. And I was surprised that all those years after he fought, all that experience, he did that.
Yeah, it's weird where we were with medical, not medical, but biological, whatever, science.
Nutrition.
You know, nutrition. Right, right. When I played Pop Warner football in the 70s, it was like, no water. Want to take salt tablets. Don't. You'll cramp up. No water. Like, no
water.
Hydration.
That's what I'm saying. You only sissies drink water.
Yes. They give you a chance in the middle of the San Fernando Valley, in the middle of two-a-days, at some point. They'd go, all right, you can go to the drinking fountain. Just a rinse. Yeah. Just a rinse. Yeah. You'll cramp
spit
up.
Or spit it out. Rinse and spit
but
it out.
But this isn't right. This isn't the dark ages with leeches and bloodletting stuff. This is just the middle of the 70s. Like, somebody invented Gatorade 10 minutes later. Yeah, now we understand all the science of everything. It's weird. This fight, No Mas, is 1980. It wasn't in 1880.
It's modern times.
I mean, like modern times. Somebody could have had a nutritionist.
Going back to what you said, the first fight was in June. The second fight was November. They turned around and made it right away.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. No, that's what they did back then. The fight was good. Let's do it again.
Right.
Now, the fight's good. let's make it again. Let's make it a year or two. Then here's the term I hate now. Let it marinate. Let it marinate. I said, marinate. It's overcooked, man. It doesn't taste good anymore.
I don't know. I'm getting hungry.
Make the fight already. Look, Triple J and Canelo, first fight was good. They did it a year later. The third fight should have been right after. It was still controversial.
Right. Spence Jr., by the way, versus Porter is what we're here to talk about. That's tomorrow, as you hear this.
We're here to talk about all boxing.
9 o'clock
boxing in general.
Fox Sports, pay-per-view, Staples Center out here. You'll be calling it, along with Keith Thurman and Kate
Abdo. Yes.
Katie. Do you also, you're a historian, you're a scholar of boxing.
Yes.
Do you know the story? I think it was Hagler Hearns. When somebody wanted to give Hearns a rub down, and he they came into his hotel room. Speaking of just sort of shoddy whatever prep, and they gave him his legs a big rub down, and his trainer was like, "No, you can't. I don't know. Bring all the blood to his whatever." He blamed it on that.
Manny said that it relaxed him so much he had nothing because he was having problems. First of all, there's so many things he. A lot of people say he overtrained. Manny said Manny knew he wasn't right.
Manny is trainer.
Manny Stewart. One of great
Manny Stewart,
But Manny said, and I was there at that fight, ringside. You know, they had done it. Just you said the story of the rub down, and they thought, well, down for sure. He's got nothing. He's too relaxed. Manny wanted guys to be on edge. I watched that. I was there, and I always tell people, fights are won and lost from the dress room to the ring. Mm-hmm. Fights are won and lost at that moment. You could train's a dress rehearsal. Showtime. Now, boom. And it's not a one-time thing. It's an every-time thing. You got to prepare to go out. Get prepared to get the crowd. And then, he walked out. He looked like the deer caught in the headlight. I was
Hearns did.
And no matter how many times he did it, that fight, he knew it. Just like when I fought my last fight, which was a stupid thing to do, but when I say I was like dead man walking, I could tell you things from my first fight. I could tell you things from winning the title, from the walk from the dressing room to the ring, because they're so embedded into my head.
You think Hearns felt that last fight?
Yeah.
Hearns felt beat before he got in there?
Yes, exactly.
And he was intimidated by Hagler?
Not intimidated. I think he knew he didn't have it. And that's why he said afterwards he tried to make it a dogfight right from the jump.
Right.
He didn't try to box him, try to make it a war, figured if I catch him early, I got my best shot because he knew he couldn't go on.
Manuel Stewart, the greatest trainer of all time. But
no, not the greatest. One.
One
greatest
of the greatest.
Ray Arcel's the greatest trainer of all time. Thank you very much.
That's your trainer?
No, Ray Arcel, who's the trainer, trained from Jackie Kidberg to Benny Leonard to Roberto Duran to even worked with Michael Spinks and Larry Holmes at the end. He expanded almost 80 years. By not just my accounts, all accounts, the greatest trainer of all. He had more world champions than anybody.
Well, all right, top three. He still – I liked him because he trained Vladimir Klitschko, but he could not say the word Vladimir. He called him Latimer.
Oh, wow.
And if you ever see him interviewed, he's like, Latimer – Latimer's, his jab's working well. Latimer's prepared for the light. And I was like, it's Vlad. It's Vladimir. And he's like, Latimer. I don't know where he was from, but
he's from Detroit.
He just could not say Vladimir. He just called him Latimer.
This is satellite, right?
This is on the internet.
Say whatever you want. I can't imitate people, and I don't do imitation of money. But Manny's one guy. Steve Kim does the best. Steve Kim, the boxer, does the best. Manny Stewart, you think Manny's sitting in the room. But
Now you sound like my wife.
So Manny, what do you think about Vladimir? This motherfucker, oh man, this motherfucker can fight. Oh, can he punch like a motherfucker? Oh shit. But this motherfucker, he ain't the smartest motherfucker though. He can punch like a motherfucker, but he ain't the smartest motherfucker. Oh, but we're gonna get this boy. We're gonna get this boy. Oh, man. We're in for all hell. Yeah. That's Manny. Manny was the best, man. But everything, he was the best.
You gotta find footage of him saying Latimer. Make me laugh. All right. What's going on with the heavyweights right now? I mean, these guys are all 6'8" now.
Not Andy Ruiz. Andy's 6'2", eyes are blue.
You like Ruiz is famously the husky Hispanic who beat
Joshua, Anthony Joshua.
Anthony Joshua.
And they have a rematch coming
up. Never, you know what, I've tried to explain to people all the time, like I it doesn't really work, but I always try to explain to people when they look at a guy's physique, mm-hmm. they watch too many movies and they go, that guy is going to kill that guy. Mm-hmm. There's never been, it doesn't work that way in boxing. Mm-hmm. The smoother guys oftentimes are better. They're just, and in life, they just have a little better balance and coordination. I don't know what it is. The big muscle bound guys, not the greatest dancers. No. You know what I'm saying? Right. Now, you take a look at this guy versus that guy, you've never seen a bigger chasm into that's gotten into the same ring. You'd never see it with 135 pounders because they're both 135 pounds. Like, how much fat can you have on you? These two guys got in the ring. One of them is an Adonis. The other guy looks like he drives an ice cream truck that's that sells weed out of the other window and lives in the barrio. And the one guy beat the other guy. Yes.
No. Just as you said. First time I saw Andy, I didn't know much about it. I didn't know anything about Andy. He fought for us on one of our cards in April or May. Just what you said. He fought a guy from Germany who looked like Drago from the first Rocky movie. Body beautiful, cut. And then Andy looked like, as you said, the guy selling an ice cream truck. And I said, and they go, no, man, Andy can fight. You got to watch. And one guy said, May, he's got some of the fastest hands of any heavyweight since Tyson. And Tyson had fastest. Andy went out there, dropped him, kicked the shit out of him, stopped him in the fourth round. Oh!
Is it?
And he just, and then when he did, when he fought Joshua, I said, no, that's a good fight for Andy, because Joshua stays in front. He's very, he's a typical, very, you know, classic fighter. Andy, and what happened? Andy, you know, so I'm telling you, Andy can fight. He doesn't look the typical, and he always says, I know I'm going to be the underdog the way I look.
But here's a question. How much... So here's this roly-poly Hispanic guy, 6'2", 265 or whatever. I mean, he's roly-poly, but he's got skills.
Right.
And just it's got given speed, heavy hands, blah, blah, blah. But how much better could he be, let's say, if he did get really disciplined and with the nutrition and stuff like that? Would that work or would that not work for him?
No. It works the way it is. No. I mean, what do you mean? What he is. Sometimes you say, if you got nutritious, I'm sure he does deal with nutritious, you know, but the foods they eat work for him. Yeah, obviously, maybe he eats a little more than he should. I don't know, Stel, because I get what you're saying. He's not body beautiful. No.
No, but when I'm...
But you're right. I know what you're saying. And maybe...
Well, here's what I'm saying. Lawrence Taylor, greatest defensive player of all time, did a lot of coke, banged a lot of hookers. And you go, yeah, but the guy averaged 3.5 sacks a game. Okay, but what if he was on a routine?
Right. Like, one less hooker.
And then you can go.
One less hooker a week? Oh,
let's say you did half a hooker.
That cuts a lot of weight off there.
You did half a gram of coke and half a hooker. So I'm just saying cut back.
No, I know.
So and then you go, well, whatever worked. There is that thought.
But you're absolutely right. But Andy Adam, you got me. Adam, yeah. Andy Adam, same thing. No, Adam.
go ahead.
He's going to go, no, it ain't. Here's the thing. I don't know. You know, some people just have to, that's their makeup.
I get it.
I don't know.
When's his next fight and how does he fit into this crazy heavyweight scheme?
We got the two. We got Deontay Wilder and we got Andy Ruiz. He's fighting a rematch with Joshua in early December. Ruiz is Saudi Arabia, and I believe he beats him easier this time.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's got his number. That was no fluke. And then Deontay Wilder's fighting Luis Ortiz in November.
How come he's not fighting Tyson Fury?
Because he's on the other team. He went to the other side.
There's politics there.
It's gay? No.
That's what I heard.
Touche.
All right.
No, he played another promoter.
What about Spence Jr.?
That fight's not, it could be made, but it ain't going to happen next 10 minutes.
Okay. Makes sense.
Spence Porter, yes. Talk about Saturday night fight. Top to bottom, this may be the best card all year. Top to bottom. That fight is going to be a hell of a fight. Everyone thinks that Sean Porter's made for Errol Spence. I said, yeah, Errol's made for Sean too. It goes both ways. But Errol's probably the best pound for pound by all indications. But here's the thing. Errol's a sharpshooter. Everything's a timing, you know. He's a sharpshooter, classic boxer. Hits you with that jab. Everything's a timing thing. Sean is with the headache that Errol don't need. Errol Sean disrupts your timing. Herky jerky, jumps in, jumps out, strong, comes in shape, great chin. Worst type of guy for Errol to fight. So, as much as they say Sean's made for Errol, Errol's made for Sean.
Who's favorite?
Errol's a heavy favorite.
Heavy favorite.
Yes. But I said, you know, this reminds me back a little before your time when Carmen Basilio went to challenge Ray Robinson for the middleweight title. But he said he's too slow, he's too short, cuts too easy. Yeah. Kicked the shit out of Ray Robinson.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what I'm saying. So, what I'm saying, anything could happen. Sean can disrupt it. It could be, if he's prepared like he is, he's always in shape. You know what you get with Sean Porter. You always know what you're getting in him. So,
Ray Robinson back in the day was an incredible athlete as well as a boxer. Like, he was a great dancer. He could move. Like, he, in a I don't know, era in the 40s and the 50s and stuff, he moved and was like a modern type guy. The stuff he did in the ring, people weren't doing at the time.
Right.
His timing, his skill, his speed, his technique. You know, like when you watch old timey basketball and new timey basketball. Right. So, 'cause it's a different thing. Basketball from the 50s, basketball now, football from the 50s. Right. He was like a sort of LeBron Jamesy back then. That's what Sugar Ray Robinson is like.
He was something else. All right. Considered by many the greatest pound-for-pound fighter of all time.
Let me hit Simply Safe. No one should feel unsafe. Period. And that's why there is Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. SimplySafe.com/Adam is where you go. Still looking for Latimer?
We got it right now. As soon as you, soon as you're ready.
Let's hear it. This is the great Manuel Stewart.
Latimer Klimko, is that?
There's actually some other person who is saying the name inappropriate that's listed as a trainer for
him. Oh, well, let's hear it.
James Ali Bashir.
Let's hear it.
Latimer Klimko, is that before? What?
Latimer.
Yeah.
Latimer Klimko.
Yeah, and you can find Manny saying Latimer, too. They just, Vlad was just a tough V.
Bridge too far?
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the news with Ray Boom Boom Mancini.